Anyway, well, why would we use UC Linux? And what is it? Well, it's a Linux operating system tailored for embedded microcontrollers. You take the microcontroller, plus you take UC Linux, and you got yourself one complete embedded system that can be used. And why? Next slide. Yeah, so we provided you 2 megs of flash on here, of which we're only taking less than the first 1 meg. And DRAM is 8 megs, of which we're only using 700K. So there's a lot of space for you to put user applications or data log stuff that you could put in there. And then, well, now you got Ethernet. Why don't you NFS mount something and just dump all of your data across the network to another machine, which this machine already does. In fact, at Comdex, that's what we did. We had the LCD display on a piece of plexiglass that we had made in Toronto at a factory in Scarborough. And our board mounted in there, Ethernet to a computer that was under the table, and it was NFS mounted to the hard drive on that computer, and it was sucking the pages off and displaying them on the screen. So we had about 15 pages that were cycling through. It was like a Silent Sam teaching everybody about what UC Linux was when we were too busy talking to other people. Yes. Absolutely. You could go slip through your serial port, and then you could use TCP/IP as well through your Ethernet simultaneously. Why not? You could turn it into a little router. How about taking one of these boards and taking the RS-232, plugging it into a modem? You take your modem, you plug it into your wall, dials up your ISP, and serves TCP/IP to the rest of your house as a proxy server through the Ethernet. Do you think that has an application for some people? Small office environment? Some people already have products out there called web ramps. Well, you could build yourself one with just one of these cards and a DB9 connector and an RJ45 and power. You've got yourself an instant router that'll do the exact same thing.
The Macintosh wireless thing does that. It does IP masquerading and hardware between your wireless Ethernet.
How big is it?
It looks like a Hershey's Kiss, about this big around at the bottom. It has RJ45 and 856 modem, and those will either do just straight routing or masquerading.
So I guess we should go out of business and wind up our company. No, it's good. So there's already applications, and that's what he's pointing out. There's already applications that are out there. And yes, there already is things like Linux and BSD that are already running in commercial real applications right now, whether it be an embedded system that you don't even know about or real live systems where they brag about it. Like most Linux systems, we brag about the fact that Apache's running on Linux, as a lot of the HTTP servers. Yes?
Obviously, this is just a start for you guys, because you're thinking of the other 30-pin things in order to sort of hard page and how to build additional functionality. I was wondering if this is like coming down the road.
Well, some people on our list would like us to go into the MP3 market. I don't know if we will necessarily be the ones that take it that way, but I think there's opportunity for developers like yourselves taking this. It's cost effective, or it will be once the volumes are created on it. It's easy to develop. It's quick to market. It only takes people with the skills that everyone in this room already has. You're already Linux enthusiasts. A lot of you have compiled a kernel. You've installed it before. What is there left to do other than develop a user application under a piece of hardware like this? Some people find it restrictive. They said, well, why did you only put one Ethernet port on there? Well, originally we weren't going to put an Ethernet port on. We put one on, and they're telling us, well, why didn't you put two? So, well, okay, buy two SIMs and wire the high-speed serials together. I don't know. But there's ways that you could use the parallel data port, put it in parallel with the next SIM and have two Ethernet ports. Or we could start designing more cards or something like that. Yeah.
So speaking of parallel, that's what I was doing. What do you have available? So we've got the Ethernet and the serial ports, but what else do you have on there?
Yeah, there's parallel I/O ports on there. If you choose to use them as parallel I/O, there's what?
Thing behind do, but it's 19 parallel IOs if you give up the liquid crystal, and it's what, 11 if you don't. And you can expand to the I2C or the SPI port, we'll get more if you don't move high speed. So if I was going to stick an A to D converter, I'd use the I2C,
absolutely. Yep. Yes.
That's easy to find. All you need to do is look in the data sheet for the Dragon Ball. Most of the stuff from the layout, so we can provide you with a link to where you can get the data sheet for that.
No glue. Everything goes right out. So it's making it easier for a lot of people. A lot of people on our list as well wanted us to bring out every single data address line and every process line that comes off of the Dragon Ball. And okay, so how many lines is there on a Dragon Ball? Does anyone know how many? 100? 100, yeah. So there's 100 lines on there, and they wanted us to bring it out to a 30-pin SIM format. So they were saying, well, why didn't you go with a larger format? Well, that's not the point. I think they lost the point here. It was to try and make a small device that could be used in many different devices out there. Things that you could use or you could manufacture. Well, why use UC Linux as the operating system inside of our UC SIM device? Well, it's scalable, has renowned stability. Well, Linux does as a whole. POSIX 4 compliancy. We also have people that are interested in porting the RT Linux patches in and making it work for this hardware, so that we could have a little harder real time than just the POSIX.4 compliancy. Where can you get it? Well, everyone knows number two if they've been following the project since last year. There's an FTP site which has the FTP archives based at Ryerson. And our new project website moved off of the HTTP server off of RIHAM and is now located at www.uclinux.org. We also have a commercial hardware and software support side, which is the .com, and that's where people, if they want to, can buy the SIM module if you're interested in evaluating it, and buy a CD if you just don't want to download the software yourself for free. But you're in the know, so it shouldn't be a problem. Pardon me? Now it's at fabrication right now, and we're still yelling at parts suppliers who are giving us a hard time because we have no established credit. So there's stuff like that's happening. Since this is a homegrown project, we don't have a lot of financial backing, and we don't want vulture capital. So we're trying to keep it a little closer to the community, eventually bring down the price as things become cheaper for us to actually manufacture. The actual SIM module, we're pricing in U.S. dollars, U.S. parts. So it's 175 U.S. And we're located out of Toronto. Even though they see us with the U.S. pricing, they think that we're from the U.S., and that's not true. We're actually here in Toronto. Yeah. And is there more slides?
Yeah, there's more slides.
Okay, there we go. What hardware is supported on the UC Linux? Jeff will talk about this a little bit more, but there's already the SIM device which we came up with, the Motorola 68K family, which includes the Dragon Ball, the ColdFire. And there was even a university in the States that did development work on the Intel i960 with Intel's assistance and took our work and ported it into the Intel platform as well. So that's cool. Well, I guess the goal here is with embedded systems is not to know what operating system you're running. Now, everyone's seen the WinCE product with a huge start. That's not right for an embedded system. You shouldn't have a big, huge start button or whatever. It should be seamless to everybody. So our idea is to make Linux invisible to people. Now, Linus himself, and I think it was an ABC interview, mentioned that in the future, people won't know that Linux is operating on a lot of different devices in their home and elsewhere. Well, it's now a reality, thanks to the work we've done and the assistance of others as well. So we're already there. Is it supported? Well, Jeff and I support it. There's people at Moreton Bay in Australia that are supporting it for the ColdFire product. One university down in the States is supporting it to help Intel out develop something in that line.
Those are complex lines. Okay.
So that's it. So there's actually more. Jeff's going to talk a little bit about the actual project status as we are right now with respect to these items, and we'll both be available for questions as soon as he's finished his part of the talk as well. So I'm going to disconnect for a second and let's switch over to him. Hello? Okay, good. So the project status of this thing, we've been working on this project now for about 2 years, on and off, different times, actually targeting different pieces of hardware at different times as well. The SIM project started only 6 months ago, but the kernel is now about a year and a half old. So you can look at the status of the kernel. Right now we're based on 2.036. By the time the modules are ready to go out, they'll be port to 2037, which is really trivial to do. It just takes some time. We're looking at some of the newer kernels. I just found out today that something I thought was going to stop us from porting it, IO completion, actually didn't change as much as I thought that it had. So we'll be able to do a port to 2.2 or 2.3 at some point. We have a complete libm, so if you need floating point, even on a processor that doesn't have it, you can do that as well. It's fairly slow because the floating point's emulated. It's all single precision, and this is based on the work from Netlib. And the GCC compiler comes with an appropriate set of soft float routines that are pretty accurate. The libc is an interesting one. It's perhaps more work than even the kernel. You have to go through and pick up bits and pieces from everywhere. If you use something like glibc, it would be larger than the rest of the project combined. So the libc that we have now, even though it's fairly complete, is only 90K, which is really good. Okay. And the various ports that we have, the ColdFire, the M68K, and the i960, all use different compilers. You need to get that integrated. The 68K specifically has massive changes to the code generator of GCC in order to support position-independent code. Since we don't have, all of a sudden now I'm louder. Okay. Since GCC generates code for absolute addressing and we don't have an MMU, we need to do everything off of a register. And the support that was in GCC for ELF to do position-independent code isn't good enough for various different reasons. So there's patches for that. But the ColdFire is using a loader that goes through and does fix-ups, and it uses eggs. And the i960 also does the same thing. So we're going to try and unify that in the future. The user utilities are also another thing that requires a bit of work for every embedded system. You don't necessarily want to have people telnetting to whatever it is there is, a telnet to your VCR if that's what you have. It might not make much sense. But we do have a bunch of things that you can do that with. There's a telnet D, there's a shell, there's mount utilities, there's LS. But all of those are custom written for UC Linux. The GNU ones are too large. And perhaps most interesting is the hardware ports. There's quite a lot of chips that we support now for processors. 68328 and the EZ328 are best known for things like the Palm Pilot. They're not general controllers. They're meant for small machines. We've used it in the SIM format there to give you something you could use as a general controller. The 332 is a very important chip to support for people that do things like EFI for engine control. The 68360 has two onboard Ethernet ports, and that's a very interesting chip as well. People use that in routers. If you have an Office Connect from 3Com, you've got one of those chips. The ColdFire is Motorola's up and coming, now been up and coming for 10 years, but up and coming, high speed embedded cores. And all of the cores are pretty much the same. And the chips come in different flavors, 5204, 5206. 5206E, they're all different sizes and have different peripherals on board. Those are all supported by the Moreton Bay people and Intel i960, and we're told they're doing a router with it. Good. Any questions about the hardware or the software?
So you said there was some IUC, like what interfaces extensions are you adding to
We'll have a device driver for each of the embedded standards. Every time I move, this thing's different. But there's not in there right now. So right now, to do things with the liquid crystal, you have a DevFB, a frame buffer device, and the rest of it is not done that way yet. You just go directly to the hardware. Anybody else? Yeah?
If I wanted to add a peripheral device, perhaps not the LCD of those 19 pins, what's the best way to do it? Actually embed it right inside the kernel code, or can I make a module and have that sort of proprietary and not under the UPL?
Right, you can do things proprietary. One of the good things about not having an MMU, strangely enough, is that there's very little protection between things. So the boundary between kernel and user space is sort of blurred. And for an embedded system, that's a plus, believe it or not. So you just write your driver as a user space program. If you need the hard real-time things for RT Linux, that's supported too, and that sits above the kernel, well, or below, depending on how you look at it. And device drivers, you can link those in dynamically as modules as well. Anybody else? i960 is a processor that Intel pushes as an embedded system. What's the new standard for I/O cards that's supposed to I2O? Yeah. Yeah, you could put UC Linux right inside of an I2O based card, which would be a useful thing to do. I'm sorry? Yes, for example, it also would have code for things that you might not consider to be in the card, like routing and that kind of thing.
How do you control your flash chip there?
How do you control it?
How are you controlling it?
The bootloader has support to burn the flash, to upgrade different pieces. The block mem device driver can suspend the kernel, write the flash, and then reboot the system if necessary. Using the flash as a file system for write a few times, read many, isn't yet supported. Anybody else? Yeah?
One of the existing problems with embedded systems right now is Y2K. Have you thought ahead yet to 2038?
2038. I thought about 2038. Maybe we'll change time T to be 64 bits. I don't know.
At this point,
yeah, we actually don't know. The answer is, at this point, if you change time T to be 64 bits on a system like this, what does it affect? Because that means that the rest of the kernel has to not rely on time T being an int size, and we don't know how that is yet. I suspect it'll be fine.
But an embedded system that's only going to last 40 years
is not useful.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll be addressing that issue. Anybody else? Context switch. The last time I measured the context switch, we were about 30 microseconds. We can get that down significantly. That's including scheduler overhead. The processor is 2.7 MIPS, so we got about 60, 80 instructions in there. That's not too bad. Interrupt latency. It depends on whether you're going from the interrupt directly to a kernel thread, or if you're going to user space. Obviously, going to user space is going to require more overhead than or less. What am I saying? Going to user space will require more overhead than a kernel thread. If you use RT Linux, it's very small. There's practically none. Mm-hmm.
Is there an interrupt line coming off those 19 on the semi-ketter?
I believe there's actually five. There are dual-purpose lines, most of them. I don't have it. It's here someplace. You can have a look at the pinout later. But yeah, there's more than one. Anybody else? Yeah?
So you use the SIM header as your interconnect. But because that is going to be like the master, unless you do that, that's going to be the master. You can figure out some way to your card so that people aren't going to be able to install it. Because I just see that people are going to do multiple SIM headers. If they choose to follow your standard board, you'll have your one SIM header that you can.
That's a good point, actually, and I hadn't thought of that. So it's a standard 30-pin SIM, and, well, like any chip, I guess, because that's what this really is intended to be just a chip. It's assumed that the user knows how to plug the thing in.
I'm just going to hand out some of the preliminary product brief stuff that you have in a chip.
Have you considered putting some holes to bolt this thing down?
To bolt it down?
Yeah.
There's actually two holes in the standard SIM form factor. You can break the tabs off and use screws through there or something like that. Actually, the best thing from my point of view is to use a little bit of epoxy. And that's what we used to use when we're doing things like ribbon cables for machines that had to do 4 or 5 Gs. You just put a dab of epoxy on either side. It makes it a real pain for servicing, but it's worth it in the long run. No mechanical hold downs or anything are going to do better. Yeah. Absolutely. We don't want to get too commercial here just at this time, but on the website there is a quick start kit. So you just get the whole thing and it goes. Anybody else? Good. Oh, yeah?
Do you have a watchdog timer?
Watchdog timer? There's one built onto the Dragon Ball, and right now it's disabled. The boot sequence is holding us back from enabling the watchdog timer. It takes a little bit of time to test the RAM, maybe less than a second, but that's significant because it caused the watchdog to go off. So we need to change the boot sequence a little bit, like the clearing of the memory, in order to tickle the watchdog, and yeah, it'll be there. Anybody else? Good. Thanks very much.